On this episode of the podcast, I have with me Utkarsh Gupta. He is the VP of Research and Development at LendBuzz. We're going to be talking about the process he goes through in evaluating ML models, how he's keeping up with LLMs, and there's so much changing that, you know, one person has to be on top of this, otherwise you might lose competitive advantage. And also, how does your team handle this? Because obviously you don't want to have them chasing down every possible emerging trend or whatnot, otherwise they'd never deliver. And Utkarsh, I'm excited to have you on to talk about some of the process and some of the thoughts behind this.
Thank you, Amir. Yeah, and I'm excited to be here. You're absolutely right. You described it very well. We have a very fast changing landscape in machine learning. And even before that, I think this idea of how do we make sure that we keep up with the right kind of model that you need for your business case has been a very interesting problem. And I investigated at least a part of it during my PhD also. So yeah, happy to give my input here on whatever, you know, let me go here.
Absolutely. Before we start, obviously the company LendBuzz, it'd be great to know what you guys do over there so everyone has some context.
Yeah, so I am a VP of R&D here at LendBuzz. I've been here full-time working for almost 6 years now. And I have known the founders for almost 10 years, at least, the chief technology officer of LendBuzz, Dan Rabib. I started working with him in 2014. And, you know, LendBuzz, I'm going to give a little bit about LendBuzz. You know, LendBuzz is something that I really liked the idea of when I was joining, and it really resonated with me because the idea is, you know, when you're trying to get a loan in the United States, you need the FICO score. You need a credit score, and you need potentially credit history of some sort. And in that situation, if you do not have it, then conventional lenders will not be able to, you know, give you a large line of credit, which would be something like a vehicle or even a mortgage. And both the founders, they being immigrants, they went through something like that. They went through the credit bootstrap process, which I also had to go through. I'm also an immigrant. You know, they both felt that there was a need for a better solution. And it completely resonated with them because there's almost an element of trying to help people who are underserved in this key area where people may not be able to get a loan just because they don't have enough credit history in the United States. So that was the basic idea, that how do we underwrite them and how do we provide them with a loan? And that's the problem that I started working on in general, but is that fundamentally, how do you, you know, credit score them?
I mean, and obviously it's a great environment for machine learning to come in and be applied. I guess let's kind of talk about, you mentioned obviously your current job. I mean, in fact, your title is a VP of Research and Development. So obviously, you have part of your PhD program as well. You mentioned obviously being involved in the research delivery side, research and development side. Let's actually start at the top. I was going to probably ask this question three, four questions in, but actually, let's start with this research and development. We're starting to see this title as, you know, an alternative to data science, machine learning, or the next step in the career path. When you receive a title like research and development within the context of, you know, working in a fintech, within lending, that type of environment, what does that mean on a day-to-day? Like, obviously, it could mean different things for different companies, but for you specifically, how much of your time is spent on the research development side? And what does it mean?
Yeah, I think so. You know, the titles there—they can sometimes be a mystery. You know, if we are being super honest here in the United States, in corporate sector, you can see all sorts of titles, and it can leave you sometimes confused. I can just say what I do. You know, I do not know how much parallels it has to different research or development, but I've seen people who are working like actual manufacturing, and this title can mean completely different thing there. So I don't even know if this is like a standardized title, like say, you know, engineering. Even in engineering, you can have different kinds of engineering. So, you know, it definitely, my day-to-day definitely goes into working with the machine learning teams, We have a few which handle different parts of the machine learning. So there is the pure research, which is quantitative research, really. It is building the financial modeling that helps us do all sorts of things, including credit scoring. But it also allows us to do something like asset-based securities, which we just announced actually recently. And we revealed the model. The name is called Aira. It's an internal name that we came up with. And it was so nice to see it actually in an S&P article where they used Aira to rank the asset-based securities that we have and give us a very nice rating. Like, feel free to look at it and refer to it there. And along with it, what has happened is that I have also had the good fortune of being able to lead some other teams in LendBuzz. That includes actually the IT and QA team. They both have I have worked with them very intimately over the last several years. IT team was basically, it was just me. When I joined LendBuzz, we were like, what it is like. It's like 6-10 people, whatever. So I was kind of also doing IT on the side. I like doing hacking projects and working with hardware as well. So it was nice. And then, it was like too much at some point because we had hundreds of people. And then we started hiring an IT team. And I just organically had that team grow under me. Research and development, very loaded, I guess, word. But reality is a lot of my time goes with machine learning team, I would say most of it. We focus on the modeling aspect. And then there's the engineering side, which is how do we make sure that the model gets served in a very nice way to the end user. And then there's the product involvement there, of course, I want to mention, which is there's the last line that, okay, the model is great, but it has to be integrated into some sort of a user interface or some sort of a backend application. And that is also handled by actually a different team. There are different teams. So LendBuzz has a lot of different engineering teams. And I'm one of the people who leads the machine learning. Like the machine learning is something that leads under me, but there's also product engineering teams which handle the rest of it. So yeah, I hope that like helps shed a light on what I work on versus what other people might work on. And machine learning, financial quantitative scoring, but also, computer vision-based models and any other algorithmic models are very much under the domain of research and development.
You mentioned product. How do you interact with the product team? Because obviously, you help bring this solution you might reference that was quoted in the S&P about evaluating some of the underlying metrics of your products. And when you're working with the product team, what's that relationship like? Because obviously, it sounds like from your side, you are involved in machine learning. You are, you are researching, you are developing, you are also shipping. So in the end, you have to deliver, you have to ship. But what's that relationship look like with product?
Yeah, so I think it's a mixture of projects, certain projects being led via machine learning and certain projects being led via product. So if there is a very well-defined need from product and it is very clear that there needs to be at the heart of it, it needs to be machine learning model doing that, then it automatically sort of comes and we start working on it as a machine learning team. There are a couple of interesting problems. I'm not going to go into too many details, but yeah, that has happened, of course, on a lot of occasions. And then there is the other side where, there could be a technological initiative which makes a huge impact on the company. Perfect example, the Aira, which was the initial risk scoring model that we have built. And it was completely led by technology, and then product figured out how to integrate it and show it in the right way. But the main user, main initiative was led by the machine learning team. It was completely developed inside now. And it was completely in-house. The financial scoring model that we built is completely in-house. And then the people who use it would be the people like the finance team, which actually do the stuff about ABS. It's not really product team's domain. It's very much finance.
So I'm gonna get to the topic. I promise. I'm gonna ask questions regarding the product. But it's quite interesting. I have a way. We'll eventually meander back. But the machine learning led products. That's very interesting because I think I've been speaking to people within machine learning data science, and it's becoming very clear that they actually have a very heavy involvement with products they bring to the company, to the market, that aren't necessarily originating from the product team. They're partnered with the product team, but the things they work on that they are bringing to the table that then gets integrated into the product, that relationship, and within your team, maybe you can even explain when that product has been developed and you bring it to the product team. Obviously, the adoption, the use case, all those things are important. When does your team start thinking about the user adoption component of that? Because obviously, you know, there is a whole product team that is responsible for the roadmap and features, and you guys are coming up with some things that apparently are, you know, fitting into where some of that traditional product management work occurs.
Yeah, so I think where does a machine learning driven project like product development come? It's usually on like a key strategic area which can lead to, you know, say cost reduction or amplification of the overall revenue and growth. So, you know, going back to the IDA example, it was obvious that, okay, you do not really have a FICO to rely on when underwriting these individuals. So we need to come up with a way to underwrite them and provide a score which is very similar as FICO to people. And it should be presented in the as a FICO, but it's not a FICO, it's a difference. So you need to make sure that, you know, that's very clear. And like a lot of machine learning research then went into how do we make this score a very competent alternative to FICO. And that is all, it is all machine learning, it's all data science really. There's no real product direct input that much needed there. But once we have that model, but you know, indirectly there will be input from everyone, of course, around, because there are people who are used to doing this, say, by hand, or what are they looking at? So once we have that, then product immediately will be required to actually build that final, or maybe the last mile, which can be pretty long, honestly. You know, I just want to make sure that I'm properly like communicating how important it is to have that strong product support to take this to the next level where it can be used. So yeah, so that's, you know, that's an example. The other obvious example there, you know, there's of course automation that you can do on the business side, say detection of documents and parsing of documents. That's the computer vision. It's a perfect example where you see there's a big impact to be had. May not originate as a requirement from product, or maybe it will originate as a requirement from product, but then it has to be built completely in machine learning. And then once it is ready, okay, product can get very intimately involved to use that, to consume it as an API or a service. So machine learning research, that's why there's a development component, which is we serve it as a machine learning service. And literally anyone inside who we authorize can call it and they use it. So we are really, they're our clients and we are trying to service them. So it's not just a model that they download and run. It's actually a service which does a lot of things, including database writing and reading and making sure that we have very fast and efficient way to do all of these different things. Yeah.
Absolutely. When you're tackling a problem like this, right? And obviously you guys have to spend time building a model, evaluating the model, making sure the results are correct, accurate, precise. When you're looking at a project like that, obviously it might or might not be a model you guys are familiar with. You might have to, you know, build something from scratch. When you guys are looking at a project like this, where you potentially are moving into an area where you guys don't have previous experience, how do you decide where to start with the modeling, right? If it's something you're kind of unfamiliar with, what's the first steps? How do you kind of tackle that?
I think the first step is always the real-world data. So how do you obtain that is a question that depends on where you are at in your surroundings. So, you know, inside the company, if you have actually done some of this, like if you actually have some customers, you can use that as a data. But then sometimes what happens is you're really just starting from nothing. And that situation, you have to go and look for public data sources, which can be complicated or tricky or even like very hard, impossible. So there's like ways around it, of course. There's all sorts of things that you can do. But there's no substitute for real world data still. Like, you need that. So yeah, it always starts with looking at real world data, coming up with, okay, this is the business need that we're trying to solve. And, you know, how much, like what kind of performance we can expect would be heavily defined by how well a human can do at that task. So looking at, say, a driver license, let's give an example, a human can basically do it and not make any mistakes or very few mistakes. It'll probably be measured in per thousand. And if you look at computer vision models out there for the general purpose users, tools, they have come to a place where they beat humans in these things. So we actually published a paper around MRZ, machine readable zone extraction from documents, from passports, which makes it easy to discuss about this here. And what we found was, you know, we were able to build a model which was very competent at parsing these passports completely in-house using neural networks. And that's like, that's how you start that. Okay, you first look at the data, then you start looking at what is the current technology that you can do. I mean, you know, ultimately it's a startup, so you want to build it in least resources, but it's also really pays to have it built completely in-house, because then you have complete ownership and like, you know, access and control over that. So you can keep on improving it, which is what we do. Like, we keep on improving those models. Yeah.
When you're going through, I mean, that's actually a good use case, obviously. And obviously you do a lot of R&D there, because that seems like a pretty, you know, pretty good project that could be applied to the business and give it a competitive advantage. As you're kind of going through the initial process and you're building out the model, is somebody keeping track? Maybe you have to just kind of go through the life cycle, but obviously things are changing rapidly. You know, there's evolutions of these models. There's the next thing coming out constantly. How often do you have to start looking back and going, there's things that are coming out we need to take advantage of, or, hey, listen, this works, just deliver it because we have to ship?
Yeah, I think so. It's the problem. I think I can summarize in one sentence: don't let perfect be the enemy of good. So, you know, as long as you have good metrics, you have defined metrics well for a given model, which is so important. And you need to have a quantitative metrics, and sometimes you need to do a human survey to see that humans do at this level. And we did that. For MRZ paper, we literally had humans look at 5,000 of those passports and annotate them. And it was completely in-house to make sure that we had complete privacy there. And once we had that, we could figure out the metrics on humans. And then if the model could produce better metrics on a isolated test set, that's very important. It has to be isolated away from the training or validation, cross-validation, then you can say, at least with some degree of certainty on your set, on your data, this is doing as good as humans or reasonably well. And then, you know, you can take that and take that into the decision-making. And then the other thing that sort of comes into is that you want to make sure that if you're failing, you are erring on the side of caution. So you are trying to make sure that, you know, your recall might be low, but your precision needs to be high, or the other way around. It really depends on the application. But as long as you know where where it is okay to make a mistake and where it's not. For example, it may be okay for you to not parse MRZ and say that, okay, I cannot do this, versus parse it incorrectly and use it to do something which is critical inside the application. So that's like, those are the metrics that you need to define. Well, you know, over here, we just now talked about like 3 or 4 of those metrics right now. And once you have them, you can build those benchmarks. And then you can keep them running. You can do these regularly. You can run these benchmarks on a regular basis. So, you know, what this leads to is ultimately, you deploy it once, you keep on, you know, using it, but then you can deploy again with a much improvement, because you have more data at that point and you have learned more from looking at the mistakes, from looking at backtesting. You know, backtesting would be one of the things that you need to do. I think for passport scanning, backtesting doesn't make that much sense, but for financial quantitative analysis, it's so important. So, you know, yes, constant maintenance is needed for models. And there is a lot of data research kind of work that needs to be done around there.
You mentioned competitive advantage. It sounds, you know, from the couple of, you know, things that you've mentioned, you've worked on, the company generates and benefits from the competitive advantage of what comes out of your, out of the team. I guess within technology, you know, software engineering does build products and then the product expands, it gets adopted, there's competitive advantage, gets built in. I feel this sounds a little bit different what you guys do, because these are very specific use cases of applied technology that isn't the entire product, but could literally change the way the product works, enhance the product in a different way. How does that competitive advantage viewed? Because I think a lot of companies are hiring people like yourself into these roles looking for these kind of competitive advantages.
Yeah. So, I mean, again, like, I think you bring a very important point that a lot of machine learning research and development seems to be very, very specific parts of the process, which can lead to a huge uplift in something like a performance, efficiency, cost. And it's like having almost adding a multiplier by doing that one particular thing. So you don't have to worry about a particular part of the application. But then there's like, we do have overarching projects also, which I unfortunately cannot share about, which go into multiple verticals. And they try to basically think about optimizing the whole business in a lot of ways. And that could be more involved and not a very niche area. But yeah, in general, you're right. It's like a niche area that you're trying to build. And then how does competitive advantage come into play? You know, it's a very interesting thing because, you know, there is a whole debate about build versus buy there to be had, because there are services which we do. The beauty was the first model that we built, Aira, was not something that we could buy off the shelf. There was literally nothing back then, at least, which could help us underwrite in these kind of situations. And the fact that it worked so well for even ABS was a huge gift, I guess. And it really helps us. And you know, it really makes me happy. But there are other things like, say, MRZ extraction, which we found was there were some things which did that, but none came close to the place where we wanted it to be. So there was always this inherent question that should we build it or should we buy? And a lot of times it was just because we didn't find anything which was remotely where we needed it to be that we ended up building it. And we are continuously, of course, looking for those. Like, hey, is there something which does this better? How is it better? Maybe we can actually, you know, start using them instead of us. But we have been, again, very good about making sure that we stay ahead of the latest technology trends there, which you got to. You absolutely have to, and not just in machine learning. You know, if you're a front-end developer, there's like a new JavaScript library every minute or so. So you need to keep up to date with that. You know, I don't work with front-end. I know about this, but like I've heard a lot about this stuff. So yeah, it's technology world. You need to stay up to date with the technologies, with the applications of those technologies, of course. And language models are going to disrupt everything, of course, you know, in a big way.
I guess last question. Do you anticipate, and this is just completely your opinion, you know, I don't expect us to predict the future. When I hear a lot of people within your space talk, I always start thinking about the P&L, the profit loss. Like, you could start tangibly tracing back some impacts to P&L. Do you anticipate, or is there a part of your job that actually measures that P&L, the metrics of the impact of these models and the competitive advantage?
Not directly, no. So, you know, we do measure specific metrics around performance of financial models. For other modeling, we do not actually directly measure business impact as of now, you know, not saying that we shouldn't. But there are teams which look on very specific things around P&L, that would be like financial modeling teams and stuff. So, you know, indirectly, we do, all of us, like I think, do care about it, and we do have certain metrics around it. Which we use to figure out, you know, how well we are doing as far as P&L goes, I guess. Yeah.
Okay. Interesting. Obviously, you do a lot of cool things. You got a great background. You get to work on new stuff, ship cool stuff. So I think it all seems pretty fun. I appreciate you being on. If someone wants to reach out to you, touch base with you on anything within machine learning, R&D space, whether it could even be around lending, is there a good way of touching base with you?
I think LinkedIn is probably the best. Just send me a LinkedIn message. My, you know, you can, they can also use my email. Yeah, I'd be happy to give it to you. But I think LinkedIn is probably the best professional network there. Yeah.
Cool, man. No, we'll put it on LinkedIn. That's great. I really appreciate your time. It was a great conversation. I love hearing your thoughts. So thank you.
Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. That's it for the episode. We'll be back again, different guests, different topic. Until then, two things. One, share this episode with someone who might also be interested in the R&D side of machine learning and just what machine learning is doing. It doesn't have to be vertical specific. It really does apply to a lot of different industries. I think a lot of companies are doing similar things. So it's a great episode. Also, like, subscribe, leave a comment, review. Let me know how we're doing. Until next time, thank you and goodbye.